हरिः
ॐ सहनावतु सहनभुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासरि गौर भक्तवृंद हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Who's speaking? Oh, Indra, that's right. 21. When the Lord was entreated to kill Vritta, who was devouring the three worlds, the Lord responded indifferently, merely sending me on his behalf. Indra's killing of Vritta, described in the hymns of the Rig Veda, occurred when the planets were being formed by Brahma and his assistants. Vritta had interfered with the universal construction by keeping the oceans trapped inside mountains. Okay, one way to do it. The sages of the Rig Veda glorify Indra profusely for killing Vritta, thus freeing the waters of the universe. But here Indra belittles the incident. The sixth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam discloses that Vritta, under his demoniac exterior, was a pure Vaishnava. Indra's killing him was more tragic than glorious. With no regard for me, he destroyed my capital, Amaravati, and built a new residence, above all others, for himself. Indra alludes here to an incarnation of Lord Vishnu named Vaikuntha, whom Srila Sukadeva Goswami describes in the 8th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, 8.5, 4-5. From the combination of Shubhra and his wife, Vaikuntha, there appeared the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vaikuntha, along with demigods who were his plenary expansions. Just to please the Goddess of Fortune, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vaikuntha, at her request, created another Vaikuntha planet, which is worshipped by everyone. The eternal spiritual planet Lord Vaikuntha manifested within the material world is called Rama Priya, dear to the Goddess of Fortune. It is located above all other planets, even Lord Brahma's. Strictly speaking, this spiritual kingdom displayed within the material universe is never created or destroyed. But because from our point of view the planet Ramapriya appeared at a certain time and place, we consider it new. Compared with the eternal manifestation of the same kingdom of God outside the material realm. The Lord may pretend to, quote unquote, create it as his pastime, but he is only unveiling before material eyes what normally cannot be seen in this world. Indra also mentions the incarnation Vaikuntha in Sri Harivamsa, 270-37, speaking after Sri Krishna stole the Parijata flower and defeated him in battle. Indra says, O sage, Lord Vishnu sacked my capital city and then built a new planet above all others. So pointing out is that all these things that are done by the Lord, the spiritual aspects, they're always there. It's just a matter of whether we see it or not. Because like Prabhupada mentions, there's deities that are, the lords of all the continents and that. Just sometimes you see them, sometimes you don't. It's not that there's a time when it may be from this point we can see, but it means they've always been there. Right? So when the Lord manifests in the deity form, he's always there. It just means from this point we can see.
And this is a general thing.
Yes.
It's always based on eternal principles.
Yes.
But our conditioning is then.
Yes. It means there's always that element, like where Kiradaksha Vishnu stays, is a spiritual planet. So it's always there. It won't be destroyed. There may be a point where we're able to appreciate it. You know, like you install the deities in the temple, then we're able to appreciate. But Krishna's always been there. It's just a matter of now we can see.
Yamuna.
Hmm? Yamuna, like this. It's just a matter of... Does that make sense? So it's not that we're the ones making it happen. We can assist in whether they want to be seen or not. Maybe, you know, if Yamuna wants to be seen, we can assist in that. But it's not that we're making it happen, and if we don't do it, there is no Yamuna. That kind of stuff doesn't... Because then we're saying Yamuna is controlled by time and space. Right? Like that. So we have to be very careful about... means you're trying to get the right thing done, but you have to know how to perceive it. Otherwise, then actually you're discussing something else. Yes?
So Maharaj, when there is some installation of deity, this means that Krishna, you always want to stay eternally in the same place?
No, it's not about the place, because if he's not controlled by time, he's not controlled by place either. It just means that there's a manifestation there. You know what I'm saying? Because Krishna is always present, so he's present everywhere. So where he wants to manifest, then we can see. But we're talking about the element is not that, you know, the deities were installed on this date. That means now we've taken the responsibility to serve them. But it's not that the deity is not present. You know what I'm saying? They don't have to be in that specific place.
Yes.
It's Krishna, so therefore Krishna is always present. Then he just agrees to be present so we can see him in this particular place. Does that?
So our consciousness is actually the deciding factor, whether we can connect.
Yeah, whether we can connect or not, but then our having that consciousness, that's by the mercy of the Lord. So then you get... Right, so the point being made is this planet, at one point then we could see it, appreciate it. But otherwise that particular planet is always there. And the Lord interacting with Ramadevi is always there. But now it's just a matter of now we can see it at this particular place. So at a particular time and place, we're able to appreciate it. But it's not that transcendental situation is bound by time and place.
Yes. But also our consciousness. If our consciousness...
Yes, no, that's that. But that's the point. Yeah. Then our consciousness, then we can appreciate it at this time. Mm-hmm. But at the same time is that we can appreciate that the Lord's always there. That's by His blessings, right? One that we can appreciate... That's His blessings because He's being manifest that we can appreciate through our senses. Because transcendental is beyond the senses. Right? But we're putting it because the senses deal with time and space, that when the Lord manifests, then that's also controlled by time and space. But it's not.
So right? Prabhupada, you could appreciate everything.
Because everything had, means?
I mean, all aspects of the Lord being present.
Yes, nothing. There's a particular submarine sandwich that he's appreciating or something like that. Yeah.
I'm sure he does, I think.
Yeah. So he's pointing out is that they're saying Dhritta, that's one of the main pastimes that Indra is glorified for, but he's pointing out it wasn't so great because the Lord was asked to do it, he just sent Indra. Right? And then, so that means it wasn't that big of a deal. Otherwise, you know, Hiranyakashipu and that, then, you know, he did it himself. And then you have the element of that, yeah. So he's doing, and then him being able to defeat him, but as the other literatures will point out what a great victory it was, but Bhagavatam points out that it wasn't really that much of a victory. Right, because he stayed, you know, he won the battle and stayed here. Vritrasura lost the battle and went back to Godhead. So who actually won? You know, like that. That's the thing. And then here is that he came without any care for his capital. He came, took the Parijata flower and fought with them and like that. And then he also, on another occasion, established this spiritual planet that was above all others, right? Because it's supposed to be, his is the best, but at the same time is, of course, Satyaloka is above them. Okay, that's, you know, you can get by with that, but then there's more planets above that, so that puts him farther down on the scale. Right, you know, it drops him from, you know, how you say, 20% to, you know, there's a fifth one there, so then 25%, you know, so it starts getting his you know, yeah. Yes. One would expect it's not the Dhruva Loka, it's another one. So that means there's two of them, so that's two strands in them. So he's sixth, yeah.
This one's above Brahma Loka, whereas Dhruva Loka is at the top of Swarga Loka.
Oh, okay. Oh, it's okay. So Satya is above.
Yes.
The Satya planetary system is above Dhruva Loka.
Swargaloka goes from the sun up to Dhruva Loka, and then above there is Mahajana, up the center.
Okay.
Which we don't see
or
see up
to Dhruva Loka.
Okay. This is Vaikuntha Pleven?
Yes. It's another one.
A god of Lord Vishnu and Brahma Devi?
This is, his name is Vaikuntha, and then his consort. So then, her one of her names must be Rama.
And this is
the
competition?
No, it means it's just like Rama is one of the many names of the consort of the Lord.
Yeah, but who's the Lord? Who's the Mahavishnu?
No, his name is Vaikuntha. Here it says, from the combination of Subra and his wife Vikunta, there appeared the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vaikuntha, along with demigods who were his personal planetary expansions. Just to please the Goddess of Fortune, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vaikuntha, at her request, created another Vaikuntha planet, which is worshipped by everyone. That way she didn't have to live on the planet with everybody else. She had her own planet. You know what I'm saying? When God's your husband, you know, there's perks. But, you know, yeah. Why not? You know, because Dhruva Loka, that's for administration. This is just for, you know, this is just theirs. You know.
What about maybe some jivas could achieve liberation, like mukti? Just getting to this
Vaikuntha
planet within the material universe.
No. But what's the point of considering that? You know what I'm saying? What you want to avoid is as you add new facts to, you know, your, you know, the memory, you don't want to then just utilize them to make newer and newer combinations of what if. You know what I'm saying? There needs to be a purpose. What's the point? All the demigods go to Svetadvi, right? But they can only go to the shore of the Milk Ocean. You know what I'm saying? So I'm saying, what's the point? The jivas are supposed to go back to Godhead, right? To the spiritual world beyond the material manifestation. So technically they are there, but you're only going to get to there and associate with the Lord through devotional service. So it's only by performing devotional service that you'll get a benefit. So, you know, so there's no need to speculate. Now if someone wants to serve Vaikuntha as their deity, then they'll go to his planet.
Oh, it's about the personality.
Yes, it's all about personality. See, because why is that? Because that's the Vaishnava thing. If you go, what if, technically speaking, by philosophy, that's called Jainism. It's called Syadvad, what if. You know, you say, yes, there is a God, but what if there's not? You know, and if there's not, but what if there's only half a God? Or what happens if he's standing on his head? You know, what if he's wearing, you know, dress casuals and eating, you know, pizza? You know, what if, you know, this is Jainism. That's what it's for. It's to completely bewilder the mind so that one doesn't get involved in material things, because you can't. You're just speculating on you know, useless things. But at the same time, it keeps you actually out of the spiritual world. So you're neither in the material world, neither in the spiritual world. And that's a waste of time. You know, it means if you're going to do something, do it right. Does that make sense? So we'll even criticize a materialist if he's not materially functioning properly. He misses opportunities, a wastes. We'll say he's a fool. He's committed to sense gratification. He's not getting any. Now that's really a waste of time. You know what I'm saying? The same with the devotee. You have the form of the Lord. You're worshiping the Lord. You're moving forward in devotion like that. That's what you want to do. You know, now you find out there's another planet there. Well, what if? Don't try to avoid that, because otherwise then, you know, there's unlimited wastes of time. You know, what if someone gets caught in the scales of Ananta Sesha, you know, on the bottom of the Garbhodak ocean? Does he get liberated for that? Because Ananta Sesha is the Supreme Lord, but then he is Sesha. And then you are only caught in the scales, so you're not necessarily doing some service, and it might even be a disservice, because being caught in the scale, you might even be giving an irritation. So are we doing service or not? Now that's the real thing. You know, I can't sleep at night because am I doing service? You know what I'm saying? Don't waste your time. Because you could go on like that unlimitedly with anything. Does that make sense? So the point is getting the Lord's association is through associating with his devotees with the purpose of pure devotion. That will get you anywhere you want. Right? So now if Vaikuntha as a deity is where you want to be, that's how you get there. You know, it's not that just somebody happens to be walking down the street and, wow, hey, this looks like an interesting place, and then pops in, and then suddenly they're liberated or something. You know, it's not like, well here, what is that, I think, ninth canto or something, there's a place if you walk into there, Ilavritavarsh or something, you walk into there, then you turn into a woman. Because there's only Lord Shiva's the only man, his wife has said he's the only man that can be here. So if you happen to wander in there, then you turn into a woman, whatever you are. So it's not like that. This is that it's if it's a spiritual planet, you can only be there by spiritual qualification. Does that make sense? Yeah. Will that work?
Yeah. For me, yes. I just thought maybe some jivas, but we should not think about other jivas, which should just concentrate on.
No, it's a matter of you can think of other jivas, but what's the point? Because to get into that planet, if it's spiritual, it's the same as getting into any other planet. Let's say you have in Vaikuntha, you have 24 Vishnu forms, right? Like Keshava, Narayana, Madhava, like this. So there's 24. So depending upon which deity you're worshiping, that's where you go. Right? And so if you're worshiping a particular incarnation of the Lord, that's where you go. So it's a generic rule. You know what I'm saying? Just like you go to the bus stand. You get on the bus for Calcutta, you go to Calcutta. You get on the bus for Delhi, you go to Delhi. Does that make sense? So the same way, it works for all of them. So it's not a matter of, but do we think about the people on the Delhi bus? No, it's that the process is the same. Doesn't matter what bus. Is that? Yes.
Is there a parallel between Jainism and Zen Buddhism?
They're all atheistic.
It seems like very focused on this bewildering mind.
That's its unique flavor.
Yeah.
Because Buddhism, Jainism, and Mayavad, they're all atheistic in that they're not accepting that there's any form of the Lord or that there is a living entity. Right? In other words, it's just illusion that you think you exist. So the reason you have problems in your life is because you think you exist. If you know you don't exist, there's no problems. Right?
Simple.
Yeah, simple. But it's just different flavors of the same thing. Right? Because there is the concept that there is the soul that then merges in Brahman. Right? But in Buddhism, there isn't soul, there's nothing. Right? So then there's you know, it's a slight different flavor like that. Jainism, exact details, I'm not sure, but all I know is that was used by the Lord to bewilder the demons when they had taken up all the Vedic sacrifices and austerities and study of scriptures, because they were wondering, why is it the demigods always win? And Sukracharya mentioned, because they perform all these proper activities. So they say, oh, then we'll do them. So they're doing yajnas, they were doing tapasya, they were studying the shastras and becoming very powerful, and the demigods couldn't control it. So they went to the Lord. Right? And the Lord said, when they came, he says, I know why you've come, so before I deal with this, is anybody would, you know, like to come back to me now? Kind of, it's all, that's not exactly why we came. We just want you to get rid of the problem here, you know? So he says, okay, you know, because the point is, the solution's worse than the problem. So then at that time, Adi Jinnah and Adi Buddha came. Like that. So Jinnah is for Jainism. And then they just went down to where they were, you know. And then the Buddha stopped the yajnas. And for the other things, then that Jinnah took care of. They, you know, they said all this in the Shastra, this, that. He said, no, but what if, you know. You know, and that's what he did. He just went, what if? And that's, you know, and completely bewildered them. So then he distracted them from there. So then from that you establish Buddhism and Jainism. So better they would have gone back to Godhead.
In hindsight.
Yeah, yeah.
The Buddhists can achieve only Brahmajyoti?
No, they don't achieve Brahmajyoti, because Brahmajyoti means the Lord's effulgence. So that's Brahman. The Buddhists don't know. From, I've heard Achyutananda explain that they get stuck in the Garbhodak mud. Because there, it's just nothing. It's just darkness. Because for them, it's darkness. For the Mayavadis, it's light. Yeah. Yeah, different way. It says, the light's on or the light's not on. Yeah. There's all kinds of things that go on that deal with all the various little things of the universe. Now, if one comes across, okay, nice, but it's not about going and looking for those. Because we see when it comes up, Prabhupada's discussing, that came up the other day, right? There was a discussion about, who asked the question? Does everybody go through all the planetary systems? Huh? You asked. Okay. Similar vein. Okay, because you were sitting there, and I was thinking there's no one sitting there, so it's not that. You moved over here. Okay, so he makes the point is that if you have this interest, then you'll go through the tour. If you don't have an interest, you just go straight. Like that. So you don't have to go through the tour, it's only if there's an interest. Then the problem is going through the tour, if you really like it, you might get off and, hey, we'll hang out here for a while. Yeah, so it's a problem. So better to avoid the tour.
Sightseeing.
Yeah, sightseeing is... But it's not a problem. If you want to see, they'll show you. But for those who are not interested in these things, they'll just straight go, because they don't want to spend time. Does that make sense? He accepts our worship on the strength of our parents' devotion and at the insistence of my priest. And then, after taking our offerings, he at once disappears, returning to his own abode. So he's saying, I'm worshiping, but it's only because my parents, because they're devoted, then he deals with me, right? Because the parents, the devotion to the parents, okay. And so naturally then, you know, as brothers, you get along. And then after he takes the offerings, then he goes back to his own place, which he already made separate from his, right? So it's just how Indra's pointing out how, you know, from his perspective, it's not that great. Because otherwise we think, oh, it's so great, you know? Does that make sense? Yeah. No, Indra takes Indra's perspective. We can appreciate his perspective. I mean, unless you have some plans or something. Okay.
So, from his point of view, it's...
Yes, it's he's just looking at it from a humble point of view that it's actually not that great. It doesn't mean that the position of him living with his brother and that who happens to be the Supreme Lord and they interact, and that still remains glorious. But he's just pointing it out from his perspective that he's only there simply because of his parents and stuff like that. So he's pointing out it's not because I'm so great, it's because my parents are great.
Well, from his day-to-day perspective, he doesn't seem to be bothered by that so much. He is enjoying his position.
No, that's there. But
so he's not inspiring to get something higher.
That may be there. You know, it's just like you want pure devotion, but it would be really nice to, you know, completely gut. Okay. We don't have to get into detail. Don't reveal too much. Sure, you know, like that. Okay. Okay. Yes. This answers the Southern King's statement that Lord Vishnu accepts in person the elaborate worship Indra offers, right? So in other words, point by point, Indra is... Because the Southern King makes these points. Narad Muni, considering those are valid points according to Shastra, right? As we mentioned, that the Lord giving is association, Lord giving facility, the Lord, you know, taking away difficulties and obstacles, all these are all symptoms of his mercy, right? But not necessarily the highest symptoms of his, but they're symptoms. And so that means he has the mercy of the Lord, and it's greater than the Southern King. That has to be appreciated. So then Narad Muni is going and saying all these points to Indra and glorifying. Now Indra is just taking them one by one and pointing out, well, it's actually not that great. I'm not that special. Right? Because all it is then, because that is a bona fide point of mercy, but there's a higher point of mercy. So it's not about, because of the negative, that's why we're leaving it. You know, it's not that Narad Muni considers, yeah, you know, Indra is a bit of a write-off. You know, it's not that. He's looking at it that those glories are there, but he's pointed out, based on those glories, there's some of the greater glories. So in other words, we're going from glory to glory. But we're pointing out these other aspects so that we don't get too distracted by the material perspective. Right? Because otherwise, then we're looking at it, well, do I have money, so therefore am I getting the Lord's mercy? Right? You know, at the same time, as if Krishna takes everything away, that's also his mercy. You know, so that's the thing, is all these things are different aspects of mercy, depending on the situation, the devotee, and all that. But you know, they're just showing greater and greater intensity. Yes? Okay. Yes.
We can never compare. We cannot compare Indra with...
Can compare?
Indra's position.
Oh, Indra, okay.
So we need always to compare with pure devotional service.
Yes, we always compare pure devotional service. Then you get the natural hierarchy. Because that's the actual principle. But because it's a story, then it's going up through all these different things. Because you see, yes, he has, but then the Southern King has more, Indra has more than that. And then, now Indra will, after this, then once he's answered all the points, then he'll direct him with someone else that he appreciates, that this person is more fortunate than I am. Because in the consideration of getting the Lord's mercy, he will think that someone else is more qualified. Right? Otherwise, how will he have the piety, like we see with Yayati Maharaj, that when Indra asked him, is there anyone that's done more pious work than you? Yayati, he had immense piety. He means very few can go from Indraloka up to Brahmaloka for programs. They can't stay there, but they can go for the programs. If Brahma's having a special program, there are those individuals and sages and that can go for the program. Not everybody can go, but they can. So he has that kind of piety. So he's saying, no one's greater than me. So Indra got upset. He says, not having this proper humility is not conducive, or appropriate for someone, in his capacity that is in the heavenly planet. So he's told him, you don't belong here. So he kicked him out. Right, so there must be that element, but it's just sometimes due to position and everything else, they forget. And so there'll be temporarily some, a bad day.
Right. We say actually that when we're progressing through these different positions, that actually all of them have unlimited mercy, because Krishna is unlimited.
Yes, but there's something has more unlimited mercy.
Okay. But actually, it's their attachment to the position they're in that limits.
That aspect is there, but there is also other aspects of mercy. Mm. So in other words, we're seeing symptoms of the mercy, just like when Ramananda Rai is discussing with Lord Chaitanya. Everything he's mentioning is shastric and recommended. Otherwise, why would he bring it up? But it's to that level of that we're looking for, of pure devotion, then these other ones are secondary. And then you get to pure devotion. Now, within pure devotion, then you have levels. And then within those things that are supportive of pure devotion, you have levels. Right? So it just shows where one's the other. But the general thing is we're taking, Varnasha. Lord Chaitanya rejects that as the first thing, so we don't care for Varnasha. Yeah, but Malecha Yavana culture didn't even feature as a even point. Ramananda Rai didn't bring that up, because who'd bring that up? No intelligent person would. Therefore, it didn't. So can you say Lord Chaitanya didn't reject it, so therefore it's fine? We reject the Vedic culture, but we keep the Western. No, that didn't even come into discussion.
Genes weren't invented back then.
No, but I'm just saying it's that, where's a nice place to sit? Okay, we could say, you have some, place that's, dry and all that. Okay, what about the facility, this and that? So now we're starting from there. Are we going to start with the mud puddle that the kid likes to sit in? And because we didn't start there, therefore the mud puddle's okay? We're not even starting there. We're starting at human culture. So that's the beginning of human life. So all he does is start where human life begins and then goes up from there. What's below human life is not even fit for discussion. Does that make sense? So we have to be very careful that in here, it's not that Indra's glories become reduced from that point. It's just that others have greater glories. That's the point. So when we're comparing these greatness, then you'll see these differences. Then you can say, yes, but Indra this, and like between Dhritarasura and Indra, then Dhritarasura is the special, because he had the faith. Right? The Lord gave Indra the thunderbolt and said, this will kill Vritta. But because it's something new, Indra didn't have experience. He's defeated all the demons with his club on Airavata. So he threw the club. And then Vritta catches the club in his left hand, not even the right hand. That always shows that it's no big deal. Right? It's just like when Krishna lifted Govardhan with his left hand, and not even the whole hand, just the little finger. And then Bhima, when he went to lift, the old monkey's tail, he started with his left hand. When that didn't work, then So it's just a slight, and then he took it and then whacked Airavata, who went back, well, I forget how much, but like 30 meters or so, you know, something serious. And then in that, he dropped the thunderbolt in that. And then Dhritarashtra's telling him, says, you don't have faith in the Lord? The Lord told you that weapon's going to kill me. Why aren't you using that? You know, you have to have faith. Pick that up. Use that. Because he's a pure devotee. He said, the Lord said, that's what you should be doing. He's not worried about that it's going to kill him. Right? So, therefore, because of that, he had greater faith than Indra. That's why in this comparison. But if we compare Indra with an ordinary person, Indra's glories are so much greater. The Lord lives with him. You know, he's in the heavenly planets. He's all these different things. He's, you know, sovereignty over the three worlds. Why would he have that unless he had the position and devotion? But when you compare it to someone who has a greater devotion than him, then you point out the weakness. But compared to the, yes, compared to the Varanasi Brahmin and the southern king, he has greater mercy. But there's people with greater mercy than that. So it is mercy, but there's greater mercy. Does that make sense? So, in other words, we can deal with the negative elements, but not that therefore then we view that personality negatively. We're looking at the comparison between what is the actual position in comparison to pure devotion. So like what you were saying, the standard is pure devotion, then you look at it in comparison to that. Right? And in many of these things, and some of them it's going down, but on some of them it's going up. You know what I'm saying? You have prema. So we'll say the bud is less, but then above prema, sneha and all those, that's more. You know, so you don't look at it, well, this one has less prema than that one. It's a matter of they're all more than the second position of prema. Right? So then their glories are greater. Does that work? The benchmark is pure devotion. That's why at that point, that's where the Lord will say, okay, now that's a solid point. Now, but there's more. Because before that, these are things that are valuable, but they're only valuable connected to the Lord. Like Varnashram is very valuable only when it's connected to the Lord. If it's not connected, it's not valuable. You know what I'm saying? Money, if it's connected to the Lord, it's valuable. It's not connected, it bothers you. You have a house, you're connected to the Lord, it's valuable. Not connected to the Lord, it's a disturbance. Right? But pure devotion, that's always a value. Then it's just a matter of the depth of that pure devotion. Is this? Yes?
In this text, because the essence of the Bhagavatam is just focusing on the pure devotional aspect of all these persons right from the very beginning.
We are that element is there, but it's a matter of the symptoms, because generally we go a lot by the externals, what is there, because everything does have its external, which is not a problem, but it's just a matter of understanding what is the hierarchy even of the secondary. Yes, but it's still within. Because up to now, these all can be accredited to piety also. So at some point, it's got to cross that where it is within the realm of devotion. Right? You know, but they're all going to use similar arguments. You know, they're going to take the point of glorification and look at it from, you know, just a simple viewpoint that, well, actually, there's better situations than this. You know, like here, he says, he comes, you know, simply because of the devotion of my parents, he accepts the offering as soon as he gets it, he leaves and goes to his own abode. So he doesn't actually hang out with me. You know?
Goodbye.
Yeah. That kind of thing. Yes, but you have all these things happening at once. Is that you are seeing the difference, so you can see. but at the same time as there's the glories, because each one of them, what Narad Muni is appreciating, is not any less just because we see his weaknesses. But his weaknesses are only compared to a better position in the same thing. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? You know, it's just, yeah. Let's say you have a very ordinary item, right? And then you have your specialty items. Now, within the specialty item, you can say this one item has more, you know, qualities or that than the one before it, and each one, so there's a hierarchy within that. But still, compared to an ordinary item, they're all way better. They're all special. Does that make sense? Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yes.
Now, we see that all these personalities, they are quite humble.
Yes. Otherwise, in other words, Indra, when we're looking at his elements of being puffed up, that's the weakness within it. But otherwise, to be in that position, he has to have better qualities than all the other demigods, right? Except for those who are, you know, on Satyaloka and above. But at least, in other words, he's the topmost, most pious living entity of those interested in sense gratification. So that means he has to be humble. Even in this world, you see, a nice cultured gentleman, he deals nice, he's humble, he looks at things in a realistic way, but he's committed to using his facility for sense gratification, social, all these different things. So Indra will even be more. Because he's just talking facts. Right? So, but the point is that, you know, having such qualification, that's why he's in the position. But what is it? But those elements that are his weakness, that's what's the difference between his position and a higher position of devotion. Does that make sense? He accepts our worship on the strength of our parents' devotion and at the insistence of my priest. And then, after taking our offerings, he at once disappears, returning to his own bowl. Now, here's also another thing, my priest, right? So, Brihaspati, because he's from the high, he's above. He's not from Indra's realm. He's from the Satyaloka planetary system. Right? When we mean the Satyaloka, the planetary system, we mean Satya Maharjana and Tapa. Right? That those four, because they're in another category. Right? Like we say, from Indra on down, that is who's interested in sense gratification. Above Indra, they're ones that are not interested in sense gratification, but they're interested in austerities, performance of duties, knowledge, you know, like this. Yoga. Yes, so Brahma's the top of those living entities. Then below him are the Pajapatis, right, like that. And then you have these other saints and sages, and like that. So they're in another category. So he's indicated here, you know, because his parents are Prajapatis. And his priest is a Prajapati. Right? So like that, is based on their influence, then he's accepting the offerings. So there's already kind of an indication here that who has greater mercy than he does. This answers the Southern King's statement that Lord Vishnu accepts in person the elaborate worship Indra offers. Indra laments, quote, "The Lord would indeed be showing me his compassion if he would just stay here with me permanently, accepting my worship." Right? So he wants that, but it's not. He's just saying it's only because of my parents' devotion, my guru's devotion. Then I could tolerate everything else he does. Right? But much of the time he doesn't even let me see him. Right, because he's on another planet. Indra's parents, Kasyapa and Aditi, intensely worship Lord Vishnu in their previous lives. And they continue to worship him now. Indra's priest, Brihaspati, is also an enthusiastic worshiper of Vishnu. Indra reasons, therefore, quote, When the Lord appears in order to take my offerings, he does so not from compassion for me, but to reciprocate with the devotion of others. And in any case, he stays only long enough to take his offerings and then goes away. Yeah. Like that. Yeah. I mean, maybe it's a little bit, but you know, it's 24:25. Then he suddenly comes back. I tell him, we are very much obliged to you for accepting our offerings of Argya. But he cunningly replies, whatever I am, whenever I am not here to accept your offerings, you may worship Brahma or Shiva instead. Indeed, both of them are non-different from me. According to scriptural statements, the three deities, Rudra, Vishnu, and Brahma, are embodiments of the same supreme being. Have you forgotten? From Indra's standpoint, these words are simply deceitful. Sri Vamanadeva knows very well that Indra is attracted to worshipping only the Supreme Lord. Yet he teases Indra by quoting from scripture, trying to persuade him to worship someone else. And Indra, compelled by the reverence he feels for Lord Vamanadeva, is forced to honor his request. Thus we see that sometimes festivals are held in heaven for worshipping Lord Shiva. 27. We cannot be certain where he lives. His abode is unapproachable, difficult for even sages to attain. Sometimes he is in Vaikuntha, sometimes on Dhruva's planet, and sometimes within the ocean of milk. Narad might ask, then why don't you join your Lord? Indra answers that he is unsure where the Lord is. By going hither and thither, the Lord must have no particular attachment to him or the demigods. 28. And now he is in Dwarka, but even about this there is no certainty. Sometimes he goes from there to the house of the Pandavas, and sometimes to Mathura. In Mathura, furthermore, he is sometimes in the city and sometimes wandering in Gokula from forest to forest. So it is difficult for us to see him, what to speak of obtaining his mercy. Indra has difficulty understanding why the Lord he knows as his brother descended to earth and is confused by his constant wandering there. The Lord spends a short time in Gokula sporting in Mahavan, Vrindavan, and other forests. He then lives a few years in Mathura and finally settles down in Dwarka. Still from there he constantly travels to Mithila, to Hastinapur to visit the Pandavas, and also back to Brajabhumi. Krishna does in fact sometimes return from Dwarka to Vrindavan as the residents of Dwarka testify. O Lotus Lord, whenever you go away to Mathura, Vrindavan, or Hastinapur to meet your friends and relatives, every moment of your absence seems like a million years. O Infallible One, at that time our eyes become useless as if bereft of the sun. Bhagavatam 111.9. So he's pointing out is that where he is, you don't know. He may be here, he may be there, he moves. In other words, according to his pleasure, he moves around. So there's no guarantee where he'll be. So saying Indra can go there, but then the whole point is then Indra would just have to be only committed to that service. But otherwise, he's in the position of Indra because of the interest to do that duty. Right? You know, so then it would make it hard. So you do see that they come down, they visit, they offer prayers, like when Krishna's in the womb of Devaki, then he's offering prayers. You know, they all come down. Sometimes, you know, at different times they come down and offer prayers and that. But you know, they generally don't stay because they like their facility. They just would like the Lord to stay there with them. You know, because it's nice. So you have your facility, you have the Lord, it all works out.
They have a job to do too, isn't it?
Yeah, they have that. But it's also because they want to do that job, that's why they have that job to do. Like Krishna arranged, if you have something you like to do, then that becomes part of your service, then you need to do that. But at the same time, as then we see is that there's always the winding down of those kind of things later in life. You know, like therefore the example was given by Uddhava that Krishna and Dwarka spends his time in household life, but then at the end he starts winding that down. You know, just to set the proper example that one needs to pull out of that and focus more just on not worrying about all the things that you want from the world, but just focusing on, you know, what's the actual benefit to the living entity. One has to do that at some point. Does that make sense? So, in other words, you can be doing that all the time, but even you're doing all the time, there's still the element of being involved in all those, how you say, bulky elements of material engagement. You know, even if it's engaged in the Lord's service, at some point that winds down. You know, because then just the direct activities of hearing, chanting, that becomes more prominent. So these other things, though they are engaged in the Lord's service, then they're not as important as the direct service. All right, so the idea is, as long as that position, as long as it's favorable, as long as those desires are there, then those more elaborate things are engaged. But when those factually go away, then, and there's no need for that service others could do, then you adjust it.
Does it wind down for someone like Indra?
Does it wind down for someone like Indra? Or yeah. I'm not sure if it's here or where it is, but there's some standard thing that Indra will be there, sitting on his throne, and suddenly there's this big festival and all that, and he's wondering what's happening. You know? And then all the demigods are coming in with a new Indra. Right? And then he looks at his garland, it's faded.
That's pretty...
Yeah, it winds down.
Pretty drastic, right?
Yeah, it just goes along and just kind of drops off. Here it's slow up, slow down. You know, you have a child and then they immediately grow up to 16 years old, right? You know, right within a few hours. You know, so then you don't have to worry about diapers and stuff like that, you know? So it makes it easy. And then, you know, I think it's the one goes along and you go, whatever's your whole time there, and only in the last year, I think it is, then the women will get pregnant. So there, when you get pregnant, you know it's over. You know, you know, so that's it. The child will be born, you're there another couple of months, and then you're gone. Because everybody wants it great all the time, so that means it suddenly starts and suddenly finishes.
So not a lot of winding down.
No, but it's there. But it's just, you know. That work?
Yeah. Not worth it.
Hmm?
Not worth it.
Yes. That's the material world. Prabhupada says, making the best use of a bad bargain. So what is the bad bargain of having conditioning? You take that, engage it in the Lord's service. So that's the best use. Yes?
Can you say that the Prabhupada's example of winding down was just in the last couple of days? He was preaching, he was translating, and then just at the end he started asking for forgiveness. And
yeah, you'd probably have to say the last day. But I mean, at the same time, he wasn't exactly running around. You know, so it's like...
That would seem to be more different thing. Prabhupada was engaged in material activities, they have to pull away from.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's it. It would be more to show what was happening when he was doing the League of Devotees. That would be a better example. And trying to get his family involved and taking over the business and doing that and help expand the business. Because he was willing to work the business as long as they'd help. But they just wanted to sit at home, him do the business, and just bankroll them. So then... You know, then things wind down a little quicker. So in other words, if things are favorable, then they can extend. If they're not, you don't. That's the idea. But that's a different thing. That's just Vaishnava etiquette. You know, like that. Because that's just a matter of what we can see and not see. So it's not the last day, he's still doing service, just we can't see. Indra directs Narada to Lord Brahma. 30 to 38. Having defeated Narada's arguments, Indra will now prove how Lord Brahma is the true object of Krishna's mercy. The narrative of Bhagavatamrita continues to unfold according to its established pattern, which can so far be summarized by the popular adage, "The grass is always greener on the other side." All the devotees so far praised have praised a set of conditions or circumstances which they themselves lack. As revealed above, Indra prizes respect, happiness, stability, and personal relationship with the Lord. All these themes will emerge in Indra's praise for Lord Brahma. 30. But you know, O best son of Brahma, that your own father is the true recipient of the favor of Lord Hari. He is directly the son of Lord Vishnu, the husband of Lakshmi. In one day of Brahma, 14 Indras like me come and go, along with different sets of Manus and all the demigods, that one day equals 1,000 cycles of earthly ages. This is mentioned in Srimad Bhagavatam. In each reign of Manu, 6 manifestations of Lord Hari appear. Indra, the chief demigods, the ruling Manu, the sons of Manu, the great sages, and the partial incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So that's in each Manvantara, then you get these 6. Srimad Bhagavatam 12.7.15. Purandara Indra has heard about all this, but is too short-lived to have realized it directly.
Purandara Indra,
has
that been defined before?
Purandara will mean Indra is the position, so Purandara will mean his name. Right? Like you have Dwaipayana Veda Vyas. Veda Vyas is the position. So Dwaipayana is his specific name. Like that. Is that? 32. According to the scriptures, Brahma's night is of the same duration. 360 of such days and night makes one of his years, and his life lasts 100 years. Just as the southern king was awed by the demigod's apparent immortality, Indra similarly marvels at Lord Brahma's lifespan. Thus he too considers longevity or material facility as one of the traits of the Lord's mercy. 33. He is the creator of the planets and the rulers he assigns them. He is the world's chief protector, the dispenser of the fruits of karma, and at the onset of his night, the destroyer of the world. The demigods have a stake in administering the universe. Okay, now I know it's okay. I'm mixing the two stories, this story and the second story. Like that, because it also goes through a lot of these same levels. I was just thinking of an incident that's not coming up, because that's in the second story. Okay. He is the world's chief protector, the dispensers of the fruits of karma, and at the onset of his night, the destroyer of the world. The demigods have a stake in administering the universe, but they lack the capacity to create or destroy it. Thus, Indra here singles out Brahma's unrivaled power as evidence of the Lord's favor. Right? Because otherwise, why would you have facility unless the Lord has given it? Right? Because it's not that he shouldn't have that or it'll be taken away. The demons, they collect it, but they're not supposed to have it, and it will be taken away. So you could say, no, but the demons have it, but then they'll lose it. But Brahma has this. This is what he's supposed to have, and he has it through his whole lifetime. At the beginning of each day of his life, Lord Brahma appoints qualified candidates to serve as Indra, the sages, the Prajapatis, and other demigods. Also, he protects the universe from chaos by establishing Vedic sacrifice and the social laws for individual classes of human beings. Thus, Brahma not only creates the universe, but maintains it as well. Indra also says that he destroys it, because when Lord Brahma goes to sleep at night, a break in his meditation partially devastates the universe. When Hiranyakashipu worshipped Brahma with the demonic aim of subverting the universal order, he glorified Brahma similarly. Let me offer my respectful obeisances unto the Supreme Lord within this universe. At the end of each day of his life, the universe is fully covered with dense darkness by the influence of time. And then again, during the next day, that self-effulgent Lord, by his own effulgence, manifests, maintains and destroys the entire cosmic manifestation through the material energy, which is invested with the three modes of material nature. He, Lord Brahma, is the shelter of those modes of nature, Sattva-guna, Rajaguna, and Tamaguna, Srimad Bhagavatam 7.3.26.27. So he's an educated demon here. Earlier, Narad Muni praised Indra for his supremacy over the other demigods. Here Indra admits that, within the grand scheme of universal administration, he is just a temporary middle manager. Yeah. Middle management functionary. Within the universe, he insists, there is no living entity above Brahma. Yeah. 34. The Mahapurusha, the thousand-headed form of the Lord, which is always directly visible on Brahma's planet, personally accepting the countless oblations offered him, and thus always giving delight to his devotees. So now he's bringing out the point is because Vamanadeva, he goes off here and there and is all over the place. But the thousand-headed Purusha, he always stays on Brahmaloka. That's where he... So then by the thing that, you know, you're always with the Lord, he accepts your offering. He's pointing out Brahma's position is better because it's not, he's sometimes there, but he's always there. Living together with Brahma on his planet is the incarnation of the Supreme Lord called the Mahapurusha. He is the thousand-headed first incarnation, Mahavishnu, whose further expansion is Garbhodakshaya Vishnu. Thus, while Indra has the association of a, quote, partial incarnation, unquote, who comes and goes as he pleases, Lord Brahma associates with the primeval source of all incarnations without cessation. This form is described in Srimad Bhagavatam in the first and second cantos. Yes?
Mahapurusha, he's the one who lies down to sleep all the time?
That we're going to see. The verses are... Stay tuned. The verses are going to unfold. The first descent of the Supreme into the material world is the Mahapurusha, Srimad Bhagavatam 2.6.42. In the beginning of creation, the Lord first expanded himself in the universal form of the Purusha incarnation and manifested all the ingredients for the material creation. And thus, at first, there was the creation of the 16 principles of material action. This was for the purpose of creating the material universe. A part of the Purusha lies down within the water of the universe. From the navel lake of his body sprouts a lotus stem, and from the lotus flower atop this stem, Brahma, because the lotus flower is the Viraj. Right? Brahma, the master of all engineers. Becomes manifest. It is believed that all the universal planetary systems are situated on the extensive body of the Purusha, but he has nothing to do with the created material ingredients. His body is eternally in spiritual excellence par excellence. You don't say it par excellence.
You say it in French.
What would you say?
Par excellence.
Par excellence. Okay. Yeah. Changes. Ask him.
Sounds better in French.
Anything sounds better in French. You know, you could probably say a sandwich made with a deep fried shoe in tractor sump oil, you know, how you say, you know, with mustard. And if you said it in French, it would probably sound really good.
Yes,
of course.
Yeah. More attractive.
Yes, more attractive, yes. Yeah. They seem to have the franchise on, or the monopoly, you could say, on making things sound good.
Yes.
Yeah. Making the material energy seem attractive and worthwhile. Yeah, yeah. So the everything is situated on his body. This is the universal form. But at the same time, it's not. He has nothing to do with it. That's the difficulty when we're dealing with the Lord, is that you have all these elements that he's controlling everything, but at the same time, he's different from everything. Right? That's the whole aspect. So he's there, and you have the primary creation, which all these things are there. So that's the thousand-headed Purusha. Now, the manifestation of all those material aspects of that, that's what Brahma creates. Right? So that's the... Yes. It says it's the Mahapurush, because he comes, first expanded himself in the universal form. So that means the Mahavishnu is expanding as that, and then aspect of that expansion is Garbhodakshaya Vishnu. So in that way, Garbhodakshaya Vishnu is the universal form. But at the same time, is then Kirodakshaya Vishnu is entering into every aspect, so he's the universal form. Right, but it's all coming from the Mahapurush. I mean, it's coming from Mahavishnu, because you have the individual manifestation of the primary creation, but there's the principle of that primary creation that's coming from Mahavishnu. But its application is within each universe, so then that will be connected with Garbhodakshaya Vishnu and Kirodakshaya Vishnu. But there appears to be that. There is the form of Garbhodakshaya and the form of Kirodakshaya, but there's also the form of the Mahapurusha who has the thousand heads. You know, that's what the Purusha Shukta is about. It's the Hashtra Shirsha Purushaha, the thousand-headed Purusha.
Is that referring
to Garbhodakshaya? It's pointing to the Mahapurusha, so an aspect is Garbhodakshaya, an aspect is Kirodakshaya. Because that's the thing, is it's the same person, it's just which aspect you're taking. Yeah. But with the thousand heads, that would be this Mahapurusha. Yeah, because it said in the beginning of the creation, the Lord first expanded himself in the universal form of the Purusha incarnation. But that's the primary. So that means he has nothing to do with the material ingredients. That Brahma takes care of. The devotees with their perfect eyes see the transcendental form of the Purusha who has thousands of legs, thighs, arms, and faces, all extraordinary. In that body there are thousands of heads, ears, eyes, and noses. They are decorated with thousands of helmets and glowing earrings and are adorned with garlands. This form is the source and indestructible seed of multifarious incarnations within the universe. From the particles and portions of this form, different living entities like demigods, men, and others are created. Srimad Bhagavatam 1.3.1-5. Right, so you have it, the difficulty will come is that we want to clear, okay, here's one person standing here, and then there's this person, but you're dealing with the whole, it's just a matter of which aspect is functioning. You know? So what is the glory? Like I said, the Hiranyagarbha Shukta is about Garbhodakshaya Vishnu, but all the points being made, if you didn't know who it was about, you'd think it's about Lord Shiva. Right? Because the Lord comes into the universe, it's because of that element of dealing with the mode of ignorance. So he's known as Tamasi. So it has that aspect. And as we mentioned, Rupa Goswami mentioned, I don't remember the term, in the Laghu Bhagavatam Rita, that when Krishna expands as Balaram, there's that capacity or potential, you could say, for the material creation, maintenance, and destruction. Right? In Balaram, though you don't see it manifest until Mahavishnu. That's where you see that aspect. But there's a name for that potential. That's why Balaram, his personality is different than Krishna. Though the same potency. Brahma discovered inside the lotus stem of his birth the detailed plans of creation. Excuse me. Brahma saw that the lotus on which he was situated was spread throughout the universe. And he contemplated how to create all the planets which were previously merged in that very same lotus. Right, so it's spread throughout the whole universe. So the universal form is going through the whole universe. You know, whatever is there, it is there, but it's not manifest, right, in the gross form. This is the primary. So this is the Lord. That's why Viraj is actually not Jiva. Viraj is Vishnu. Right, and then Brahma is born from Virat. Right. So that's the lotus, is represented as a lotus. So he's born from the lotus. Right? So the whole masculine, feminine principles of how the whole universe is constructed, that's Virat. Right? So therefore, one could complain, oh, and he's born from a lotus because the Lord doesn't have to worry about the conventional method of procreation. The same time is that the lotus includes the masculine, feminine principles. So then you could also say, yes, so then he's born from that aspect. Manu mentions this. Thus engaged in the service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Brahma entered into the whirl of the lotus, and as it spread all over the universe, he divided it into three divisions of worlds, and later into 14 divisions, Srimad Bhagavatam 3, 10, 7 through 8. Right, because you have to have the places where people stay. Right, so you have the three planetary systems, right? Bhurbhuvaswa, because that's the main mentalities. Then everything else is subdivisions of those mentalities. Right, so you're going to have Bhur, which means this planetary system. Bhuvar is all the planets below this, and the space between this and the heavenly planets. Right, and then the heavenly planets, then that's Swarga. But then Swarga also includes Satyaloka, right, which is technically beyond. But you know, so there's all those divisions within each one of them, right? And on our planet, then you have all the different islands. So that's the divisions there. In meditation, Brahma discovered the thousand-headed Mahapurusha, who at first had been invisible to him from his lotus seat. He offered prayers to that Lord and made a special request. My dear Lord, may you come and live on my planet in this very form. Thus the first Lord of creation became Brahma's constant guest. As Indra is stating, Lord Mahapurusha on Brahma Loka consumes the offerings made in sacrifice, which resemble a constantly flowing river, because on Brahma Loka so many sacrifices are always being performed. Thanks to the Lord's being satisfied by these offerings, the inhabitants of Brahma's planet are perpetually blissful. It is true that Lord Mahapurush is sometimes absent when he merges into Sri Krishna to join him in Mathura Dhamma on earth, and the ecstasy on Brahmaloka is accordingly interrupted. But time on Brahmaloka is so expansive that the duration of Sri Krishna's descent is barely noticeable. In effect, on Brahmaloka, Lord Mahapurusha is seen constantly. You know, it's like even if you're living with someone, you don't see them all the time, you know. even though you're in the same house. So it's, you know, but in effect, it's like you're always living. No? Yes?
When Srila Prabhupada outlines the planetary display to the temple of Avatara, he lists what to include, and he gives Brahmaloka, and then gives Govindakshaya Vishnu. It seems that he's referring to
his Mahapurusha, yes, because he's on the bottom, he's on the top. Because otherwise, how will it function? It's just like when they're churning the milk ocean, they first just put the mountain down, because that's what you have to do. But it wouldn't function without support of the Lord. Therefore, Kurma Avatar was on the bottom. But it won't be balanced without the Lord on the top. So Krishna Garbha sits on the top. Then the whole thing will work. Then they can, within the middle, do their work. The same as there. You know. Otherwise, your ayanamsha would probably be greater than it is. You know, so the Lord's sitting on the top, therefore it stays in place. Mm-hmm. 35. I could give you thousands of other reasons why Brahma is the real object of Sri Krishna's mercy. What more needs to be said? He is, in fact, Krishna himself. You know this since it is proclaimed both in Shruti and Smriti. You must also be familiar, my lord, with other aspects of Brahma's greatness and the greatness of the residents of his planet. Indra points out a prime distinction between Brahma and himself. Brahma and Vishnu are often mentioned in the same sentence, whereas Vishnu is never equated with Indra. Footnote 26. Krishna's five transcendental qualities, which are partially manifest in Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva, are 1. Changelessness, 2. All-cognizant, 3. Ever-fresh, 4. Satchidananda, possessing eternal blissful body, and 5. Possessing all mystic perfections. And these are the extra, these are the, from, you know, 51 to 55.
What does it actually mean when it says Vishnu is never equated with Indra?
They're never mentioned in the same sentence.
Yeah.
So Brahma and Vishnu may be mentioned in the same sentence, but Indra is always in a different sentence.
Yeah.
They may be in the same paragraph, but always in a different sentence. So that's an interesting one that you never really think about, you know. So am I really friends with them? Are we mentioned in the same sentence?
You
know?
You got close, but you didn't.
Yeah. You know. Bonnie and Clyde, they're in the same sentence, right? You know, there's some connection. Is that... Srimad Bhagavatam itself teaches that Lord Brahma is an empowered incarnation of Vishnu, right? Lord Vishnu said, Brahma, Lord Shiva, and I are the supreme cause of the material manifestation. I am the supersoul, the self-sufficient witness. But impersonally, there is no difference between Brahma, Lord Shiva, and me, right? Because you're just, impersonally means you're just talking about the application of the potencies, right? And so then Brahma's potency is the potency of the Lord, right? And it's a potency to manage the universe, you know, create the universe. While the Lord then will maintain it, is that aspect, Shiva will destroy it. So on the impersonal platform, there's no difference. That's why you can say they're the same. And so then, and since impersonalism is very popular in India, then that aspect is generally what's taken as prominent. But then as personalities, then Vishnu is the superior, because he's the source of the power of Brahma, and it's his transformation that is Shiva. So he's transformed to Shiva, but Shiva can't transform back to Vishnu. My dear Daksha Dvija, I am the original personality of Godhead. But in order to create, maintain, and annihilate this cosmic manifestation, I act through my material energy. And according to the different grades of activity, my representatives are differently named. Right, so depending upon what grade of activity, therefore you have Indra, you have Vayu, you have Varuna, you have Yama. Because these are all Krishna's potencies invested in these particular jivas, and they're known differently because of the activity they do. Yama is known because of what he does. He's not known for being, you know, in the MBA or something, right? You know, he's known for being, you know, taking care of, you know, judging the living entities. No? Yeah.
Hmm?
Big job. Yeah. Big job. Yes.
Is it how we can understand properly? Is it Jiva like Lord Brahma and the Yamaraj achieve this certain position according to his desire and qualities, and Lord invest his power in this Jiva to perform his duties?
Yes.
Is it the Lord gives after the Jiva achieved? But it is not like at the same time he also have all the abilities and all.
No, because what ability does the Jiva have? You have 1/10,000 the tip of the hair. So
like this for all Jivas?
Yes.
So we only can have our desire and pure motives.
Pure or unpure, whatever it is, that's where you'll get situated.
Okay. But the jiva in the beginning doesn't have anything. Whatever he can do, it comes from the Lord, right?
Whether beginning, middle, or end, it's still the Lord. It's not just in the beginning, but it's also today. You know what I'm saying? If you go back to the beginning, Cain makes trouble. He gets into trouble. Somebody today makes trouble. He gets into trouble. Right? Abel was nice. He's respected like that. Someone's nice today, they're respected like that. Does that make sense? So it's not just in the beginning that it has that.
So jiva doesn't have any power.
Jiva has the power to desire. You know what I'm saying? What do you want to do with this? I'm saying, this question, what will be its usage? Yeah.
You see, if you have desire to come to the spiritual world, to serve with the Lord,
right,
to satisfy the Lord, be sincere in this desire. But
right,
I'm just thinking, what is our power? What is our
qualification? What does it matter? Why does it have to be our power? Our qualification is our sincerity. It's the Lord's power that makes things happen. It's His mercy. So it's not that I have to have power and then...
So in the beginning, nobody has power. So
in the end, no one has power. They're empowered. Right. As it pointed out, you know, in the beginning, there's the Word. So then the Word, then there's the name, then there's the form, there's the qualities, there's the pastimes. So the Lord empowers all these things. But the point is it's not about... These are elements of knowledge. They're only valuable to get you out of the material world. In the spiritual world, no one worries about these things. Because there it's about expression of rasa. So you don't worry how Yogamaya arranges all these things. You just take part in the pastime. So all these things that no one has any power, that's only within the material world that we worry about that. The spiritual world, nobody worries about all that. It can be explained, but no one worries about it. Is that what I'm saying? Okay.
So all qualification, only sincerity and desire. This is only our qualification.
Yes, that's all. That's the thing. So that's why ultimately, as we go through this, that's what will come out. Right? Okay. One who does not consider Brahma, Vishnu, Shiva, or the living entities in general to be separate from the Supreme, and who knows Brahman, actually realizes peace. Others do not. Right? So you understand that they're all part and parcel of the Lord. It's all His different potencies acting, you know, specifically for the various situations. They're not separate from the Lord. Because we think they're separate from the Lord because of that illusion, that's why we suffer. So you're peaceful when you understand, no, everything is connected to the Lord. Nothing's separate from the Lord. Right? So that's the difficulties. We think, okay, I have my devotional service and then I have, you know, my practical life. That's why it's a problem. That's why I say I have to be practical. This is, you know, I have to work with it. It's a problem because you think it's separate. If you understand everything's connected like that. Right? Because the idea is, I have my freedom, my independence, I can do what I like, and then part of my life is devotional service, and I'm trying to make it more. But, you know, we have to be realistic. You know? But that's the whole thing, it's never is. That. Yes?
In these examples here, these people have been approached, it seems that they're taking the secondary or the facilities as being directly related to the devotional service.
Yes, because Shastras will support that point. But at the same time, as Shastras will show the opposite.
But maybe they're overstressing that.
No, not so much they're overstressing. It's just like, let's say you say, this devotee, you know, he's so elevated, devotees respect him.
You know, they're always wanting them at their programs. Everyone deals nicely. They're giving all facility because you're appreciating that that primary element is there, and you're just pointing out the secondary elements that support that. Right? But then when you come to the individual themselves, they reverse it and then take that the primary is something else, and this is just a secondary, so therefore it's no big deal. Right? So you're seeing both sides of the same thing, is that this aspect is a symptom of pure devotional service. But at the same time, it's not what is pure devotional service. Right? So we can discern both. Yeah.
So are we talking cup half full, half empty here, depending on...
Yes, yes. You know, so you say, wow, you got your cup's half full. And you say, what do you mean, it's half empty? You know, so all it is because the Vaishnavas, when they're glorified, then tend to take the other side. Because it's not... See, now, if a demigod came and said all these things to Indra, he would just sit there and say yes. Because that's the position. But, you know, Narad Muni's coming, so you're dealing, okay, well, what is the absolute position? Then they're going to make a difference. Okay. Yeah. 37. Sri Parikit said, having heard these words from Indra, godly Narada replied, well said, sir, well said. Sadhu bho sadhu. And hastily went to Brahma's planet. Right? So it's not that there is a problem with Indra. It's not that he thinks any less of him, because his glories is, but there's someone with greater glories. So his purpose is to see who has the greatest mercy of the Lord. This is not a Hollywood kind of thing where anybody has any defect and they're a total write-off.
No glories.
I always thought Indra was a bit overrated. Yeah. It's not like it.
So last season.
Yeah, yeah. So last Manu. Yeah. Yeah. So last Manvantar, yeah.
Not like that.
Yeah. Narad sees the Mahapurusha on Brahma Loka. 34-43. Srila Prabhupada above mentioned that Lord Indra and the demigods are Sakama devotees. Among the four goals of human life, the desire for liberation is the natural consequence of excessive indulgence in sense gratification. In this part of Sri Brihad Bhagavatamrita, that's the point, is that the brahmachari is already situated in that position of liberation, what's the need to get married? His idea of getting married is then you engage the senses and then you see this, then, you know, that's a waste of time. So then you go for liberation. Right? In this part of Brihad Bhagavatamrita, the philosophical emphasis shifts from devotion mixed with karma to devotion mixed with jnana. Right? Because you're having to deal with both of those. On this step of Narada's journey, Lord Brahma is featured as the representative for the residents of the higher planetary systems. Right? Because he's going to be the topmost of all those on the Satyaloka planetary systems, Maharjana, Tapa, and Satya. 38. There, Narada first heard from a distance a huge sound of the many great sacrifices performed unceasingly and with great devotion by the sages on Brahma Loka. Narada's first impression of Brahmaloka was the volume and opulence of the sacrificial worship. Vedic sacrifices may be performed simply or elaborately according to the resources and ambitions of the performers. More than any other Brahmins in the universe, the residents of Brahma's planet are willing and able to carry out the longest, most complex sacrifices. Right? Because it's just a matter of they have that ability, so you use it. You know, that's all. So for them, it's not a difficulty. They're not sitting there having to keep looking back at the book and go, you know, flick through and trying to figure out if there's some quicker way to do it or something or like that. You know, they can do all these things. They know all the mantras, they can channel things. So all these technical things in the rituals are just different ways to attend to detail to see that you're always absorbed in doing things very nicely for the Lord. That's all. 39.
He then beheld, among the sages, the Supreme Lord in his Mahapurusha form, looking very much satisfied, decorated with crowns of matted locks. 40. The Lord in his thousand-headed form, the personification of sacrifice, had appeared there with his consort just to accept the offerings and delight his worshippers. Lord Mahapurusha is the originator of sacrifice and is their presiding deity. As described in the Purusha Shukta of the Rig Veda, at the beginning of creation, the first sacrifice in the universe was performed, and for this sacrifice, Lord Mahapurusha provided the sacrificial ingredients from his own body. The Lord reveals himself in this form on Brahmaloka, not simply to take his offerings, but to please his worshippers. He enjoys personally distributing the results of sacrifice. So it's not that he's just taking, because that was the whole point with Indra, that he just comes, takes, and goes. But here he's taking and trying to please, right? Because, yeah, you know, so it's on a higher level, because before it's on the karma level. They're doing everything to please the Lord, but they want their... Yeah, what is it? The Brahma Samhita verse about... I think Shukterya Meva Nigama Prati Daishtavanti means that the demigods, they're offering the prayers to the Lord, offering very nice Vedic hymns for the purpose to get their residences, their bodily features, their ornaments, their powers, positions, chariots, everything like that. But they're devotees because they're going to the Lord. Right? And they know that it's from him, so they don't forget, though, you know, occasionally they might, but generally they don't forget.
Talking from Sakama to Niskama?
Yes. Yes, basically. Okay. 41. To enliven lotus-born Brahma, the Lord consumed all the items offered him, placing them into his thousand mouths with his thousand hands. After awarding the performance of the sacrifices, the benedictions they desired, Lord Mahapurusha went to his sleeping quarters. As the goddess Lakshmi massaged his feet, he entered the pastime of sleep. The two principal pastimes of Lord Mahapurusha on Brahmaloka, directly accepting sacrifices and sleeping, are described by Vaishampayana Rishi in Mahabharata at the end of the account of the killing of Kalanemi. Vaishampayana says, he saw the Lord in yet another of his forms, consuming his share of the oblations of ghees offered in sacrifices by great sages. The thousand-headed Lord, his heads covered with matted locks, entered that room and lay down to sleep. This Prabhupada mentions about worship of Shaligram Shila. He was, you know, saying it's, you know, how you say? Worship, sleep, you know. So it's the same principle. According to Sri Sukadeva Goswami, is that slow?
Yeah.
It's slow. Okay. I was thinking, because my watch shows that it's... Okay, so then we'll end here. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Govardhana ki.